We're hovering on Nuntes Amadeus, the eight lines from the bottom. We've been discussing a bunch of interlocking machlokasin of Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosi. The first one was whether the floor of the Azara has the Kedusha of the Mizbech. There's a pasuk in Malachim that seems to imply that it does. Rav Yehuda holds that's exactly what it means. You could use the floor as if it were the Mizbech, subject to a condition that the Gemara is going to point out soon that Rava says, and Rav Yosi holds that not. Rav Yosi holds, as the Gemara is going to say, that it just means that he made the floor holy in the sense that now it's considered the Azara, and now you can build the Mizbech there. The second question, the second machlokas that depends on that, is, the next machlokas that depends on that is what was the size of the Mizbeach in the Mishkan? The pasuk says it was 5 by 5. Rabbi Yossi says that's exactly what it means. It was 5 by 5. Rabbi Yehuda says no, it means each quadrant, each quarter of it was 5 by 5, meaning the whole thing was 10 by 10. And that affects the question, what it means when the pasuk says that the Mizbeach in Shlomo's times was too small, and therefore they needed to make the floor of the Azara holy. Does that mean they had the original Mizbeach of Moshe, and it was too small to bring all the korbanos that they're going to bring for the Milurim? Or does it mean that even the Mizbeach that they made for the Beis Mikdash, which had a Mokam HaMarocha, 20 by 20 Amos, even that was not large enough for all the korbanos, and therefore they had to make the floor holy as well. Then we had a third machlokas, which is... what is the height of the Mizbeach? The Pasuk says about the Mizbeach in the Mishkan that it was 3 amas tall. Does that mean, so Rabbi Yehuda says that means exactly what it sounds like. Rabbi Yossi says you have a Gzeira Shava from the Mizbeach HaPnimi, which was twice, its height was twice its width. And the same way with the Mizbeach HaChitzin, its height is also twice its width. The reason why this relates to the previous Gzeira Shava is because Rabbi Yehuda was learning a Gzeira Shava from the word Ravua, that it says by Yechezkel, when he describes the Mizbeach, he mentions a size, he's measuring from the middle in all four directions, and Rabbi Yehuda says the same thing would be as far as the one in the Mishkan, whereas Rabbi Yossi is saying no, the Gzeira Shava, Ravua, comes actually from the Mizbeach HaPnimi and not from Yechezkel's Mizbeach at all. So that's where we left off. That Rabbi Yehuda holds the Mizbeach in the Midbar was only 3 amas tall, and Rabbi Yossi holds it was 10 amas tall. So the Gemara says, "Omalei Rabbi Yehuda." So Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Yossi, "How could you say the Mizbeach was 10 amas tall?" The pasuk says that the chotzer was 100 amas long, and the height of the kloyim was 5 amas. It's in parenthesis over here because that's not exactly how the pasuk quotes it, but the point is that the point is that that's not exactly how the pasuk goes, but the point is the pasuk says. So the crush and the Mishkan were 10 amas. But here we're talking about the coin
shorter than the crush.
Hold on. Here we're talking about the coin of the Chotzer.
You know what I'm saying? It was shorter than the crush?
Well, that's what it sounds like. So wait. So Rabbi Yehuda says, it says that the coin, that the curtains that surrounded the Chotzer were only 5 amas tall. So he asks, Efshe Koyin Omer Agabe HaMizbeach La'avoda B'yodoi. So how is it possible the Koyin is going to be standing on the Mizbeach, which according to you is 10 Amos tall, and he's going to be holding something to do the Avoda, V'chol Ha'om Royin Oisim V'cholitz, and everybody can see him because the Koyin only 5 Amos tall and they don't hide him. It's not respectful to the Avoda that it should be done in full view of everybody can be watching from far away.
What's the point of it?
The point of the coin would be to mark off the chotzer so you know where you can check kodshim and where you can eat kodshim kodshim. But still, it's a matter of sneers.
Yeah.
You find actually in a much later period, not long before the Churban Bayis Sheni, Josephus in his histories tells how at one point Agrippa Samelach builds a big tower in Yerushalayim too because he wants to observe the Avoda, and the Kohenim didn't like him and they put up an extra wall to block him. So there may have been other reasons as well because they figured he's not necessarily just looking at it because he wants to be in this order and in Avoda from seeing the Avoda of the Kohenim. He may have had more ulterior motives, but still you see this idea that everybody shouldn't just be staring at the Kohenim while they're doing the Avoda. Maybe they're inside the Azara, of course, but they shouldn't be just be able to watch from anywhere. So Rabbi Yossi answers, as a matter of fact, the Kloyim were not only 5 amas tall. So the pasuk mentions the Kloyim, the curtains of the Chotzer, v'es mosach shara Chotzer asher al mishkan v'al mizbeach, and it mentions the screen, the curtain that was in front of the gate of the Chotzer, which surrounds the Mishkan and the Mizbeach. So we have a heck. Now, why does that have to mention the Mishkan and the Mizbeach? So we have a heckish there between the Mishkan and the Mizbeach, from which we can learn, Ma Mishkan, Yud Amos, Af Mizbeach, Yud Amos, from which we learn that the Mishkan is 10 Amos, and from that we learn that the Mizbeach is 10 Amos. Now, what does that mean? The Mishkan itself is in fact 10 Amos. And we see that because the kroshim of the Mishkan were 10 Amos tall, and then they spread the curtains of the Mishkan over it, so their actual the main building of the Mishkan that contains the Kodesh, and the Kodesh of Kodashim is in fact 10 Amos tall. However, the couple of the Mefoshim, the Shittim Kubetzes, and the Chot Nosan, and others don't like that Girsa in Rashi, and bring a different Girsa, that the proof is from the Kloyim, that they had to be at least the height of the Mishkan, in order, it's not right either, that the Mishkan should be standing there, and everybody should be able to see it in full view from everywhere they are. So the Kloyim had to be at least 10 Amos tall, and not necessarily only 10 Amos, because the plus continues, Kloyim Chamesh Esrei Amah El HaKosim. The Kloyim were 15 Amos on each side of the gate. You have the width of the chotzer of the Mishkan was 50 Amos. The gate with the paroichas over it was 20 Amos wide. So you have 15 Amos left on each side. Rashi explains that at this point we're assuming, even though on the face of it, the 15 refers to the width of it. But Rashi says that at this point the Gemara is assuming that it means the height is also 15 Amos. And in that case, it's not only on that side, means that you have, there's 50 Amos width, 20 of them are the Mosach, and then 15 on each side, 15 plus 20 plus 15 equals 50. But now Rabbi Yossi is explaining that no,
it is this way.
The 15 is along the width, not the height.
Okay.
So that's Parshat Trat. Okay. But Rabbi Yossi is understanding that it also means that also means the height. That the height of it was 15 Amos, so that answers your question. There's no problem with the Kloyim, there's no problem with the Mizbeach being 10 Amos tall, because then you have another 5 Amos above it, and that's enough to conceal the height of the Kloyim. So that's the point of Rashi. Tosfos has a bunch of problems with that explanation. The fact is, how could you possibly say that it's referring to the height? The pasuk very clearly says that it's referring to the width, and also Tosfos discusses based on a relevant Gemara and Eruvin, and so on and so forth. Tosfos discusses that fine. We're not talking about the height, but at least we're saying that when it says 5 Amos, then it means, as the Gemara is going to say, it means 5 Amos above the Mizbeach. It doesn't necessarily mean the Kloim Chamesh Esrei Amah El Amah El HaKosev does not necessarily mean, like Rashi says, it's actually 15 Amos tall, but nevertheless it does at least mean that they're higher than what you thought they are, and the point of them is to conceal the Mishkan and the Mizbeach. Rabbi Yossi says, "Matam abayim hey amos." So why does the pasuk call the kloyim only 5 amos? That means misfas mizbeach l'mayla. It means from the upper edge of the mizbeach. The mizbeach was 10 amos tall, and that means, by the way, that means including the kronos. Now when you talk about you, so you have even more, because when the kohen stands on top of the mizbeach, he's not standing on top of the kronos. He's standing on top of the surface of the mizbeach, which is only 9 amos tall. So you have 6 amos from there which is plenty to cover up the kohen and the avoda that he's doing. So that's another machloekus that relates to the priest. So far we have 4 different points that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing about, all of which are interrelated. Rabbi Yossi continues, "Matam alema v'shalosh amos kaimase." Well, then what does the pasuk mean? What does the pasuk mean when it says that the mizbeach was 3 amos tall, and you, Rabbi Yehuda, are saying that it means the whole thing was only 3 amos tall? It means misfas soiviv l'mayla, means only from the upper edge of the soiviv. So again, you have the yisoid, you have the soiviv, and then you have the rest of the mizbeach, and from the soiviv upward until the surface of the mizbeach is 3 amos, and then you have the 4th amah is the area of the is the kronos themselves. So that's what the 3 amos means. The Rambam, in fact, writes that now a number of details of how the mizbeach are built are not necessarily ma'akev. We're going to talk about later on in the parak. We're going to talk about there are certain details of the construction of the mizbeach that are ma'akev. It has to be square, it has to have a kevesh, and so forth. But then there are certain other details that are not ma'akev. One of them being the height, which is again how Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda can be arguing. Physically, the mizbeach was either one or the other. But in other words, the argument would be which one is a allowed to be, or which one is better that it should be, or something. But the Rambam writes, it's Sack of Puzzles, it's less than 3 Amos tall, because the fact is the Puzzle does say the Shalosh Amos Kemasi. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda. So what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Now, so we said before that one of the points that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda were arguing on is where we learned the Gzeira Shavuot Ravua from. So we said that Rabbi Yehuda had learned from the Mizbeach that Yechezkel describes for the third base of Mikdash, Shimon and Meher of Yamenu, where when it says Ravua, it doesn't mean the total, he's not describing the total surface area. He says that the top of the Mizbeach is 12 by 12 Amos. Doesn't mean 12 by 12. It means that each quadrant of it is 12 by 12. You're measuring from the middle, it 12 Amos in each direction, so the whole thing is 24 by 24. And he says, you learn a Zeta Shava from that to Moshe's Mizbeach, which also says Ravua, that it means the same thing when it says 5 Amos, 5 by 5 Amos, means 5 in every direction from the middle, so total 10. And meanwhile, Rabbi Yossi had learned the Zeta Shava from the Mizbeach HaPnimi, that it means just like that one is twice, the height is twice the width, the same way the outer Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, but Rabbi Yehuda explains, Ki gomer gzeira shava b'roch bohu d'gomer, Rabbi Yehuda holds that when we learn the gzeira shava ravua, is referring to the width of the mizbeach and not the height of it. So he says that in that case, you don't have a source to say that the mizbeach should be any taller than 3 amos. Okay, so the question is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the kloyim were only 5 amos tall, because that's what the pshat haposik says. Well, the question is, b'shlem l'Rabbi Yehuda, ul l'Rabbi Yehuda, hokam ischazi koyim. The question is, the fact is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to see the koyim. Here you have that Rabbi Yehuda is asking, how is it possible the mizbeach is 10 amos tall and the kloyim only 5, and you see the whole thing.
Who says you can't see the koyim?
Well, that's what we were just saying. Rabbi Yehuda is saying to Rabbi Yossi, how can you say the Mizbeach is 10 amas tall and the Kloyim only 5 and the Kohen is going to be doing the Avodah on the Mizbeach in full view of everybody. No, and if the Kloyim are 5 amas tall, a person is 3 amas
what's
tall.
What's wrong with being seen?
Yeah, what's wrong?
It's Aksnias. That's what it is. In other words, the Avodah, it's not the covered. For the Avodah, that it should be done in full view. Maybe a person is inside the Azara.
The opposite.
People should see Mizbeach Korban.
Okay, but the Gemara is assuming that not. The Gemara is assuming that there should be something hiding.
We're doing such.
So that's the question.
He's embarrassed. Yeah. What's going on?
Embarrassed, but of course, there are certain things that are not meant to be just splashed all over in public. We have such things that sometimes the more important thing. The more important thing is the more behatzne it is. The Kodesh HaKadoshim. Why do we not have the Oren in full public view? Why do we not have the Oren in full public view of everybody? Is because it doesn't belong. It doesn't belong on display.
Nobody talks. No, none of them follow him. This particular point.
Not specifically.
It's a given.
It's pretty much a given that the avodah ought to be. Okay, there's one mafarish I see who Mikdash David mentions this point. But yeah, it's covered for the avodah that should be done with tnius. Yeah.
So, important things have to be done in a closed environment, not
yeah. Groups. So that's the question then. So even according to Rabbi Yehuda, Okay, anyway, let's go on. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, so Hokam is Chazi Koyin. The Koyin can also be seen. A person's height is 3 Amos. We're saying you only have 2 Amos above the Mizbeach because he holds the Koyin of 5. And for that matter, actually, if he holds the whole Mizbeach is 3 Amos, the Pashtus, that may mean the entire thing, including the Kronis, in which case maybe according to him the surface. No, the Gemara is not doing that. The Gemara is assuming that according to Rabbi Yehuda, what it really means is the height of the body of the Mizbeach is 3 Amos plus 1 Amma for the Kronis. So you have the Koyin is standing 3 amos off the ground, and then you only have 2 amos of him being covered. And the answer is fine. Fine. You can see the face of the coin, you can see the face and the shoulders and whatever of the coin, but you can't see the actual avoda that he's doing. That should be more bahasna lechas. Yeah. Okay. Now, bishleim l'Rabbi Yehuda. Now, let's go back to the first machloikus of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Was what does it mean when it says that shleim amal kiddush has toicha chotzer? Does it mean that the whole chotzer now has the floor of the chotzer has the din of the mizbeach, or does it mean that just that he, or does it not mean that? So let's see. Do bishleim l'Rabbi Yehuda ainu d'chiv kiddush? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's easy to understand what it means. Kiddush, Itaka made that he and his beis din made that the whole chotzer now has the kiddush of the mizbeach. Rashi points out that would be. Now, in Masechta Shavuos, we talked about this a day or two ago. There's a procedure the Gemara describes over there of how you make an area, how you extend the Azara. So here, Shlomo would have done that. He would have done that procedure with the Mincha, with Shiurei Mincha and songs and all that in order to make it official that this now has the Kedusha. There's a point that one of the Mephoshim makes, which is that actually it wouldn't strictly speaking be that, because that's to extend the Azara to a place that it wasn't before. This is to make the Azara have the Kedusha of the Mizbeach. So fine, it would be that he'd do something on the floor that has to normally be done on the Mizbeach, like bruning the Kremitz of a Mincha. Fine, the point still remains, in other words, that appointed Rabbi Yehuda, that's what the word Kiddush means. Elo Rabbi Yossi, my Kiddush, but appointed Rabbi Yossi, what exactly is he making holy? Appoint to him, the Chotzer does not have the Kedusha of the Mizbeach. And the answer is, that's what it means. Lahamid b'mizbeach. It means he made it holy, that it now has the din of the Azara, and now you can put up the Mizbeach made of stones in it. In other words, when the pasuk is Vayomahu Kiddush HaMelech Hatzer HaChotzer, doesn't mean he gave it a higher Kedusha than, that doesn't mean he gave it that before it was the Chotzer and now it has the Kedusha of the Mizbeach. It means that before it didn't have the Kedusha, and now he did the Shiurei Mincha and the whole thing in order to make it that now officially it's the Chotzer and now it's a place where the Mizbeach can be built. Okay. The Shlomo that of Yosi Hanuch Div Katan. Now, when the Pasuk says that Shlomo had to do that, the Pasuk says because the Mizbach and the Choshef, the copper Mizbeach, was too small. So according to Rabbi Yosi, we understand what it means it was small. He said that it was physically too small to be able to handle all of the Korbanos. So in other words, the copper Mizbeach was too small, therefore Shlomo replaced it with a larger Mizbeach. With a larger stone mizbeach. El Rabbi Yehuda my cotton, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, then why are we saying that the mizbeach and achoshes is small? It's not just the mizbeach and achoshes. The mizbeach that Shlomo himself built is also too small, according to Rabbi Yehuda's calculation. And the answer is, fine, hachikama, what the pasuk means, mizbeach avonim she'osa Shlomo tachas mizbeach and achoshes, the stone mizbeach which Shlomo had made instead of the mizbeach and achoshes, cotton have even that turned out to be too small, and therefore Shlomo has to be mekadosh the entire floor of the chotzer to have the kedusha of the mizbeach so that they could brun korbanos and things there. So the Gemara says, "B'maid plea. What is the underlying machlokas that drives all these four that drives all these four machlokas in over there? We have four different points that they're arguing on. Where does it all begin, basically? So the answer is, let's look at that Zeta Shava on the word Ravua that we said before. So we have it says Ravua by the Mizbeach HaChitzen, it says Ravua by the Mizbeach HaPnimi, and it says Ravua by the Mizbeach that Yechezkel describes for the third Beis HaMikdash. And we have the Machlokas, which one are we learning the Mizbeach HaChitzen from the Mizbeach HaPnimi or from Yechezkel's Mizbeach? So my plea, so Mar Saba done in Chutz Michutz, then done in Chutz Mipnim. Rabbi Yehuda says, if you're going to make a Gzeira Shava, it should be you're learning something that's outside from something that's outside. So the Mizbeach of the Mishkan, learn its size, learn its width, its width and its length and width from the Mizbeach of Yechezkel, which is also outside the Hegel. Rather than learning from inside, you, Rabbi Yossi, want to learn from the Mizbeach HaPnimi, but the fact is that's inside the Hegel, that's a whole different thing. Omar Sava, whereas Rabbi Yossi says, Donim Klimi Kli, on the other hand, you want to learn one Kali from another Kali. The Mizbeach of Moshe's times was a Kali, it was portable, like all the other Kalim of the Mishkan. The Mizbeach of Pnimi is also a Kali. Same thing. As opposed to Yechezkel's Mizbeach, he's describing a Mizbeach in the permanent Beis HaMikdash, which is like in the first and second Beis HaMikdash, it was built into the floor, it was built out of stone. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, so if it ain't done in clean midinian, so Rabbi Yossi says, don't be learning the size of a keli, the mizbeach of Moshe's times, from a structure which was built in Shlomo's times. So therefore, he says, you have to learn the Gzeira Shava from the mizbeach HaPnimi. And once we have that machloikas, then that drives the rest of them, because once we have then that, according to Rabbi Yossi, the mizbeach of Moshe's times was ten amas tall, and then that also requires him to say, therefore, that the width of it is only 5 by 5, because he's using the word Ravua to tell us about the height, not about the width. Then that in turn requires him to say that Mizbeach was too small, and then because we said the Makam HaMarachah, it was only 1 amma by 1 amma, and therefore that Shlomo had to replace it with a larger Mizbeach, which is 20 by 20 ammas. And in turn, because the Mizbeach, according to him, is 10 amas tall, is why the Kloyim have to be 15 amas tall in order to screen the Kohen when he's doing the Avodah. Meanwhile, that's all according to Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the flow of things is that you start out with the Gzeirah Shavah teaches us from the Mizbeach of Yechezkel, that Moshe's Mizbeach was not 5x5, but rather 10x10. Therefore, there's no need when Shloimeh, therefore the Mokom HaMa'arocha of it was 6x6. Therefore, Shloimeh's Mizbeach, which was 20x20, where Shloimeh had a Mokom HaMa'arocha 20x20, is taka not large enough to handle all the korbanos they had that day, because its area, its surface area is only about 11 times as large, and they're bringing 140,000 times, they're bringing 142,000 korbanos, which is 140 times, more than 140 times, the number of korbanos that Shloimeh brought on the old Mizbeach and Givon. So therefore it wouldn't fit. And therefore Shlomo has to make the floor of the Azara holy. And in turn, Rabbi Yehuda says, since I'm using the Gzeirah Shavah to teach us about the size of the Mizbeach, so I'm not using it to teach us about the height. Therefore the height is only 3, like it says in the Pasuk, and therefore the Kloyim can be only 5, because that's enough to screen the Kloyim.
Where does this number come from, 142,000?
The Pasuk says in Malachim, that by the Chanukah Sabayis, just the Shlomim alone, they had 22,000 cattle and 120,000 sheep brought as Shlomim. Plus there were oilers, and so yeah. So so that in the Gemara yesterday, we had that Rabbi Yossi had made a point that what are you saying that the Mizbeach that Shlomo built was too small to handle the korbanos? If even the Mizbeach of Moshe, where the Mokom HaMa'arocha was only 1x1 amma, and it was able to handle 1,000 korbanos in one day, as the Pasuk says, that Shlomo brought 1,000 korbanos on it. And the reason is because it actually says it was a fireman Hashemayim, so it burnt things supernaturally. So then, if the Mizbeach of Shloimeh has 400 times the size, how can it not handle 140 times the number?
How many Korban Pesach used to bring
you these? Korban Pesach. Sometimes you had there were 1 year. The Gemara tells us in Pesach, and they had 600,000. They had them that 1.2 million Korban Pesach. Yeah,
1.2 million Korban.
That's yeah.
That's doable.
Yes, it was doable. Yeah, they were able to do it all in one day.
It makes sense.
I don't know. I haven't done the math, but yeah. Again, it was a fireman of Shemayim, so yeah. The real question is how the Kohenim could do it that fast, but yeah. Okay, onward. Fine. So now that we have that whole discussion, however, Omar Rava, so Rava, so now the reason why we brought in this whole discussion is because we had a point that we had a point. We were discussing the question, if the Mizbeach is damaged, then we said that all Kodshim that was shechted at that point are possible. And we had a machlokas Rav and Rabbi Yochanan about that point, whether even korbanos that are still alive that weren't shechted yet when the mizbeach is damaged, whether they're possible or not. In the course of that discussion, the Gemara had mentioned that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you can't sprinkle blood unless the mizbeach is intact. So the same way over here. Then if the mizbeach is damaged, then you can't sprinkle blood on it. So now let's go back. Now that we discussed Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, so now let's bring back in Rava's point. Amar Rava moider Rabbi Yehuda bedamim. Rabbi Yehuda does agree that when it comes to sprinkling blood, you have to have a mizbeach there, and you can't not you have to have a mizbeach there, but you can't do it on the floor. Even Rabbi Yehuda holds that the floor has the kedusha of the mizbeach as far as burning korbanos, but it can't be as far as sprinkling blood. And we know that, says Rav at the Tanya. We learned it in Braisa, we learned this from Sochem, we also learned it earlier in the Masechta. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says like this, speaking of the Korbanos Pesach, so you had hundreds of thousands, maybe even million, maybe even over a million Korbanos Pesach were being brought. The Koyanim are Zoris, they're very quick to catch the blood, but they're also very quick to pass it to one another to do the Zrika on the Mizbeach, and the result is occasionally the blood of a Korban would spill onto the floor. Now, earlier in the Masechta, we learned that if the blood spills directly from the neck, then it's possible to sprinkle on the Mizbeach. But if it spills from the neck into a Kli Shartis, like it's supposed to, and then he spills it from the Kli Shartis onto the floor, then you can collect it from the floor and sprinkle it on the Mizbeach. So now, Rabbi Yehuda says, at the end, you have a lot of blood on the floor, and there's a concern. What if the blood of one of the Korbanos was spilled on the floor without reaching the Mizbeach, and now that Korban's going to be possible, and some poor fellow out there and his family are going to be eating their what they think is a Korban Pesach, and they're not going to be yotzei. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Kois echad hoyim malami damatar rovis. A Kohen would fill up at the end one cup with all the mixed blood on the floor.
How did it work? You make a yishech. There's a ton of dam coming
out. Yes, there's a bunch of dam coming out. And the
so you have to catch as much as you get.
You have to catch as much as you
get. Obviously, some goes on the floor.
Right. But to be exact, actually, we've talked about this earlier in the Masechta, where there's 4 stages of how the blood comes out when you shech. It's different stages in how it spurts out and also slightly different colors. First you have a little, first you have little drops of blood come out as you start cutting through the skin and the initial muscles. Then you have, as you cut further in, then you have, it starts oozing out. It starts, not just individual drops, but you have an ooze. Then you have, you shech through enough of it, and the blood comes gushing out. And then you have at the end afterwards, after the gush is finished, then it trickles out again the rest. The third one is what's Dama Nefesh, and there's an opinion in the Gemara and Krisis that the second one is also considered Dama Nefesh. The Negei also, as far as what a person is Chayav Karis for. Anyway, so here what we have is fine. But Rabbi Yehuda says, earlier in the Masechta and in Pesachim, Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Dam Mevatel Dam, that blood cannot be Mevatel blood, so therefore he's not concerned about the fact that there may be Dama Tamsis mixed in with that, so you'll still have, there will be Dama Nefesh someplace there on the floor, potentially, because not all of it, because again, either, not so much because all of it may not have been received in a Mizruk. If it wasn't received in a Mizruk in the first place, it's possible to sprinkle, but
you get as much as you can, the rest can go on the floor.
No, that's not the point. The point is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying at the end of it, here, take one cup and sprinkle it on the Mizruk. What's the point of it? Some of that blood, at least one molecule of that blood, may have been in a Kli Sharis and was supposed to be sprinkled on the Mizruk, and then it got spilled, and no blood of that particular carbon has yet reached the Mizruk.
Because in one Keli they put many carbonis, is that what it is?
No, Each time they shafted a carbon, they caught the blood in one
keli. It goes into the keli and you sprinkle them as
well. Because that's the point. They pass it from one carbon to another until eventually it's poured on the mizbeach.
Correct.
The problem is that in the course of that, it might get spilled. One individual carbon out of the whole 1.2 million.
The whole thing, man, gets
spilled. Let's say the whole thing got spilled and no blood of it reached the mizbeach. So now, that's not a kosher carbon. So therefore, if you heard it says, fill up a keli, and v'shoifcheh gam mizbeach, and pour it on the mizbeach, she'imi shofech domeh shal achas mehen. This way, in case, during the whole rush on Erev Pesach, one of the korbanos, the blood spilled, and none of the blood of it has yet reached the mizbeach, nimtzeh machshira, then it comes out, this is making it kosher. We learned earlier in the Masechta that the Chachamim disagree, because they said that it's mixed in with Dama Tamsis, and then so on and so forth. The point is, the Isak, says Rava, the Isak Daidach Savar of Yehuda, Kula Azara Mikadsha, if Rav Yehuda were to hold that the entire Azara has the full Kedusha of the Mizbeach, even as far as sprinkling blood, then how could you sprinkle it on the Mizbeach again? Then what do you need to? The fact is, the mitzvah has already been accomplished. If Rav Yehuda holds the whole Azara has the Kedusha of the Mizbeach, then as soon as that blood spilled from the keli onto the floor, then there's your zrika, so the korban is kosher. So that shows that Rav Yehuda holds, when it comes to sprinkling blood, it has to be done on the actual Mizbeach. However, the Gemara says that's not a proof. The Duma Rishim de Kasava, Shvicham, the Kayacha Adam Be'inen, fine, but maybe the reason is because he holds it's fine for it to be on the floor, but it has to be deliberately spilled there by a person. So here the point is, it may have gotten spilled, Shaloi the Kavana. So it's considered misastic or whatever the exact reason would be. Why we would say it's possible, but the point is, in other words, that not necessarily does that demonstrate that Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't hold, that you couldn't deliberately go sprinkle blood on the floor. So the Gemara says, well, in that case, still, imkein nishkalei v'nash b'chalei adufte. Well, in that case, all he has to do is, yes, fill up the cup, like Rabbi Yehuda says. Why do you need to go over to the mizbeach? Just spill it right there on the floor. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, that would be good enough. That shows Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you can't pour blood on the floor or apply blood to the floor and have that be considered like it went on the mizbeach. However, the Gemara says, not necessarily, but don't, Mishum Domain and Mitzvah Mokher. No, you know what? Maybe the only reason is because you have, the fact is, of course, that the Kedusha of the Mizbeach is that the Kedusha of the floor is only Mikoyach, the Kedusha of the Mizbeach. Even if we say that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you could sprinkle blood on the floor, the fact is, of course, it is better to sprinkle it on the Mizbeach. So we could still say, Rabbi Yehuda says, go sprinkle on the Mizbeach, because why not? But maybe he would agree that b'di'eved, if it was applied to the floor, maybe it would be kosher. So not necessarily, in other words, can we demonstrate that what Rava is saying, that Rabbi Yehuda holds, that would be possible to sprinkle blood on the floor, maybe in fact it is kosher, and you don't have a proof from that, because we would tell the Kohen at the end to do the mitzvah and amofa. Getting back now to this matter of the Mizbeach having been damaged, so we started by saying that on the previous daf, that if the Mizbeach is damaged, then Rav had said all Kodshim that were already shechted become posel, and Rav Yochanan had said even Kodshim that were already designated and are still alive. So now let's talk more on that subject. If the Mizbeach is damaged, And we talked about yesterday, the stones of the Mizbeach themselves have to be whole. They can't have any cracks or dents or whatever in them. They can't be touched with iron tools or they become porcelain. Yeah, the Mizbeach itself has to be square. So meaning, in other words, we talked about in the previous paragraph, that the Mizbeach was built out of a mix out of stones held together with a binder of plaster and then lead and various other materials. So now, if part of that structure became damaged and now the Mizbeach is not perfectly square anymore. That's, you know, think of like bottom of tefillin, you know, that has to be square, and you can easily have a corner gets accidentally rounded off or a side gets dented or whatever. So the Balazs says, Mizbeach shenifkam, ein oichlin beginoi shiore mincha. Then you're also not allowed to eat the leftovers of a mincha because of it. Meaning, the Mizbeach, the mincha is kodshei kodshim. It's supposed to be eaten in the Azara, but Rabbi Elazar is saying, by the same token, it also has to be eaten only where there's a Mizbeach. And a Mizbeach means an intact Mizbeach. Shenema, because the Pasuk says by a mincha, v'ichlua matzis etzel mizbeach, eat it as matzis, because the fact is that a mincha itself, menachos are almost exclusively matzah. You have only the shtei alechem is basically the only shtei alechem is basically, and certain breads of the Torah are the only exception, and even those are not offered on mizbeach. But even the shiore mincha, even the leftovers that the kohenim eat, they're not allowed to make chometz either. So you have to eat it as matzis etzel mizbeach next to mizbeach. So what do you mean? He ate some on the Mizbeach Achlua. What do you mean? They don't have to eat it right next to the Mizbeach. They can eat it anywhere in the Azara. Ella, what the Pasuk comes to tell you, Bizmanshu Shalim Velo Bizmanshu Choser. Only when the Mizbeach is intact, not when it's damaged. So therefore, that's where the Velozer gets his date from. All right, the Gemara says, Ashkechon Shiore Mincha. Fine, that tells us that the Shiore Mincha are like that. Kodshe Kodshim Minolon. How do we know the same thing is true as far as Kodshe Kodshim, that them also, if the Mizbeach is damaged, you can't eat them? So here we're talking about, again, in Andafnon Tess, we talked about where the korban had been shechted, but the blood hadn't been sprinkled yet. So we said, Rav had said that the korban becomes possible now, because now you can't sprinkle the blood as long as the Mizbeach is damaged. And we said, we said that even if the mizbeach is repaired afterwards, then that was already nidche, and now it's not, and now it's not nira again. But now we're saying that even the blood had already been sprinkled, or we're saying over here the koymets of the mincha had been offered, which is the equivalent of that. Then nevertheless, it's possible. So how do we know the same thing applies to kodesh kodashim? Tamadlam a kodesh kodashim. Therefore, the pasuk says by the mincha kodesh kodashim. That's the geusa that we have in front of us. The shittim kubetzes explains based on Rashi that it's not actually because it says the word kodesh kodashim by the mincha, but rather that make a zeta shava on the word kodesh, where it says by each of the kodesh kodashim as well as by the mincha, it says the word kodesh. The Rashash actually says there is a way to salvage the gusa that we have in front of us. Kodesh kodashim mean precisely the fact because the Torah describes the mincha as kodesh kodashim, then therefore it has the din of all the other kodesh kodashim. So it means what applies to it applies to all of that. What?
We use this pasuk.
The word kodesh kodashim, what do we use it for?
We used it previously, didn't we?
I don't think so. But in any case, it says kodesh many times by different korbanos, so you have plenty of places to make a zera shava from, yeah. Okay, so therefore that tells us that Rabbi Elazar's din applies not only to a mincha, but to all kodesh kodashim. Kodashim kalim minayin. How do we know the same thing applies to kodashim kalim? That also, if the Mizbeach is damaged, you can't eat them either. Tosfos wonders why we had earlier in the Masechta a few times a hekesh that says Zoisa Torah la'olah la'mincha v'la'chatas v'la'osham la'amaluim l'zevach hashlamim. You say it in morning davening right before Ezer Mekoyman, and then we have a hekesh between all the korbanos. So the Gemara should have just said that we learn from that hekesh. So Tosfos leaves that question open. Anyway, so how do we know kodeshim kalim the same din that if the Mizbeach is damaged, they can't eat them anymore? And they will keep in mind, we're talking about eating them anywhere in Yerushalayim. So the answer is, Amar Abaye asked me drasha de Rabbi Yossi. The answer is, that point, we will learn from Rabbi Yossi's drasha. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gimel Dvarim, Mishum Gimel Skenim. Rabbi Yossi said three dinim in the names of three Skenim. So each he learned one din from each of three Skenim of the generation before him, and he tells them over all together. V'zeh Echad Mehen, and one of them is as follows. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yochol Yala Odom Maisa Sheni Yerushalayim V'Yechlenu. Bismanazeh. You would think that a person should be able to take Maaser Sheni nowadays to Yerushalayim, even when there's no Beis HaMikdash, and eat it over there. We know you have Maaser Sheni is supposed to be taken to Yerushalayim and eaten there, unless you can't bring it to Yerushalayim and then you exchange it for money. But that applies only when the Beis HaMikdash is standing. Rabbi Shmuel says, how do we know that the same thing does not apply after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed? Now, Rashi mentions the point. The question is, how do you have Maaser Sheni in the first place? If the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, then what happened to the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael? Rashi explains that Rabbi Shmuel would say, even after the Korban, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael still continues to exist. Therefore, the mitzvah of Floris Baretz still continue to exist, and therefore you do have the mitzvah of Maaser Sheni. We'll talk about shortly that there was an enormous discussion about that among Rishonim, about the ins and outs of that. But let's stick with this for the moment. So Rabbi Shmuel says, you would think that a person should have to bring Maaser Sheni, even nowadays, to Yerushalayim, and eat it there. And he says, v'dinhu, you could argue the contrary by a mamatzinu. You would say b'chur ton avos mokem, a b'chur of an animal has to be brought. The Torah tells you to bring it to Yerushalayim, and you bring it as a korban. Umaisa ton avos mokem, and maisa sheni also has to be brought to Yerushalayim. So you would make a binyan av between them. Ma b'chur ene el b'fnei abayis, just like a b'chur is done only when the Beis HaMikdash is standing, as the Gemara is going to explain soon how we know that. It's the same thing. Maaser Sheni would be eaten only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, you could argue that way. However, you could contradict that mamatzinu, as usual with a mamatzinu, a binyan ab. You can slug it up if you find a dissimilarity between the two things. Because after all, b'chur has a different chumrah. You have to sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach. You have to burn the emurim on the mizbeach. So you could say, because of that, there's a greater chumrah, and not a greater chumrah, but because of that, therefore, you need a mizbeach, so therefore it can be done only when the Beis HaMikdash is standing. On the other hand, Maaser Sheni has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash per se, it just has to be brought to Yerushalayim. So you could slog up that mamatzinu. So we would say, fine, bikurim yechichu, fine, prove to the contrary from bikurim. Bikurim are not offered on the Mizbeach, and yet they can be brought only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. So the same thing we would say as far as Maaser Sheni. The problem with that still is, Mala Bikurim, Shekein Tu'un and Hanocha. The Bikurim, a stage of bringing the Bikurim, is you take the basket with the Bikurim and place it on the floor next to the Mizbeach. It's called Hanocha. And then at that point you say some of the psukim, and then afterwards you take it and you wave it, and then you say the rest of the psukim, Arami or Ibanami. So again, you could say the Bikurim have to be put next to the Mizbeach. So therefore, of course, that means there has to be a Mizbeach. As opposed to Maaser Sheni, has nothing to do with the Mizbeach. So then you can't learn that. So that's what the question is. Mala Bikurim, Shekein Tu'un and Hanocha. So we thought Bikurim Yechichu, we can prove from Bikurim, because you don't need to sprinkle, there's no blood in Emurim, and yet it can be done only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. But the counter argument is, Mala Bikurim, Shekein Tu'un and Hanocha. The Bikurim have to be placed down on the floor, next to the Mizbeach. So as opposed to Maaser Sheni does not. So we don't really know. Do we have a source then to say that Maaser Sheni can be eaten in Yerushalayim only when the Beis HaMikdash is standing? We can't prove that by a mamatzinu from Bechor. We can't prove by a mamatzinu from Bikurim. So what's the din? The Gemara is going to ask in a minute, why don't we do a Tzadah Shavah? But anyway, so Rabbi Shmuel continues, Talmud Leimar, because of that, because you can't be sure, the Pasuk says, Va'aveisim Shama Oilus Seichim, Gemara, the Pasuk says that you should bring there to Yerushalayim, and it lists your Oilus, and it lists a whole bunch of other things, including Masri Seichim. So therefore, Makish Maisa the Bechor, so you have a hekesh, it mentions the Bechor, and it mentions the Maiser. Makish, Maiser, the Bechor, therefore you have a hekesh between Maiser of grain and Bechor. Ma Bechor and Eina, Elop, Fnabais, just like a Bechor, can be brought, can be offered as a korban and eaten as a korban, only when the Mesmith is standing. Ah, Maiser Sheni, Eina, Elop, Fnabais, the same way Maiser Sheni would be the same thing. You're going to say Bechor has greater chumras. Doesn't matter, Eina, Meshivin, Allah, hekesh, unlike a Mamatzinu, which we can easily slog up, a hekesh we cannot. So that's how Rabbi Shmuel says, that's how we learn that game. So now the point is, once we go through this discussion, we're going to see that the point is, we see from this that a Bechor cannot be eaten if there's no Beis HaMikdash, and if there's no Mizbeach, and that's how the Gemara is going to use that to prove this point that we said that Kodesh and Kalim cannot be eaten if there's no Mizbeach. But first, let's see, the Gemara says, V'neder dinner v'nesi b'me'atzam. Why is Rabbi Shmuel saying you can't learn from Bechor because damim ve'emurim? You can't learn from Bikurim because Hanocha. But and therefore, you need a pasuk. Why don't you do a Psalm HaShavim? Say that a Bechor needs damim ve'emurim. Which Bikurim do not, Bikurim need Hanocha, which Bechor does not, and Hasada Shava Shabahem, that they have to be, that they can be eaten only when there's a Bismikdash, and then we can bring in Maisa Sheni as well. The Ritva in a different Gemara, this Gemara is also in Makkas, points out, you know, a Hekesh is a better Drosha anyway than a Mamatzinu, but still, we started with a Mamatzinu, why don't we finish with it and do a Tzad HaShavah? So the answer is Mishum De'ikla Mifrach, Ma'ala Tzad HaShavah Shebehen, Shekein Yesh Ben Tzad Mizbeach. Because the answer is they both have something in common. They both have this in common. They both involve the Mizbeach. Fine. Bechor, you have parts of it are actually sprinkled and burnt on the Mizbeach. The Bikurim doesn't have that. But the fact is the Bikurim has to be placed next to the Mizbeach. Both of them have an involvement with the Mizbeach, which Maisa Sheni does not. So therefore, you couldn't have learned Maisa Sheni, even from a Tzad HaShavah from them, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel has to quote a pasuk. So now that Rabbi Shmuel said that, let's figure out. My kasavar. What is when Rabbi Shmuel says as a given that Bechor doesn't apply when there's no Beis HaMikdash, and he starts using that as a basis to learn Maisa Sheni, my kasavar, what does he hold as far as the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash? If he holds that the original Kedusha, that the Beis HaMikdash was made holy by David and by Shlomo, and that continues not only in its time, but even La'osid Lavoi, so that even after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, then it still has the same Kedusha. And Rashi points out, he would evidently hold that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael would both be identical. He's taking it as a given that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael still exists, because that's why he's talking about Maisa Sheni, which is a mitzvah that requires the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And if he holds that the same thing is true as far as the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, so then after the Bechor Nami. So why shouldn't you be able to bring a Bechor nowadays? Fine, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, but nevertheless, it should be possible because the place still has the same kedusha. So let's say, for example, you put up a mizbeach only, and you bring the korbanos on that. You find, by the way, it mentions at the beginning in Sefer Ezra that's exactly what they did when they came to build the second Beis HaMikdash. They set up the mizbeach. They started bringing korbanos, and only after that, after they had started getting the materials together, they start building the heichal. And then, of course, you had the start of Yehudah ben Yamin, the kosim, and all of that got involved, and the whole construction was delayed for 18 years. But the fact is, the Gemara mentions in a few places that you can bring korbanos even if there's no heichal, as long as you have a mizbeach. Anyway, so if that's the case, then the Bechor could also be brought nowadays, and there'd be no reason for him to say, as a given, that a Bechor is not nowadays. The Ikasava Loikid Shalasid Lavai, and if he says that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and of Yerushalayim does not continue for future generations, once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, then it loses its Kedusha, and then his question is as far as Meister. His question is as far as Meister. Let's say, for example, you have Meister that you designated before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So then after the Bechor Nami Tziboi, then you have the same question on Bechor. So let's say, for example, you could have the same way as Maisa Sheni. You could have a case where Maisa Sheni was designated before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and now Rabbi Shmuel is trying to figure out, is there still a mitzvah to eat in Yerushalayim? Well, you could ask the same thing by a Bechor. Suppose that there was a Bechor that was shefted and the blood was sprinkled, and then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and then the question is, can you still eat that Bechor? So why is it that he's taking it as a given that the Bechor or not, and Meiser, he's having a question. So Amar Rabbeinu, La'olam Kasava L'Kidsha, in fact, Rabbi Shmuel holds that the Kedusha does not extend to future generations. Once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, then the Kedusha goes away. The Hoch of Meiskin, but that's what we're talking about over here. The Bechor Shem Nizrach Dome Kodim Churban Abayis, the blood of the Bechor was sprinkled before the Churban, the Chor of Abayis, then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Ba'adayim B'Sorei Kayim, and the meat. And the meat is still in existence. And the reason why Rabbi Shmuel takes it as a given that meat cannot be eaten, the itkash besorei l'domai, because we have a hekesh between the meat of the bechor and the blood of it. The pasuk says, "As domam tizrik al mizbeach, v'as chelbam taktir." And then the pasuk continues of Sarum Yilach, that the meat will be for you, the Kohenim, to eat. So we learn from that, that only, Rashi phrases it, that only when you can sprinkle the blood, then you can eat the meat. So if the Mizbeach was destroyed, then you can't anymore. Madomim Mizbeach, Ach Sarum Mizbeach, just like the blood has to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach, the same way the meat can be eaten only when the Mizbeach is intact. So that's the question. So Bechor is a given. So now the question is whether Meiser is the same thing. V'osi Meiser v'yalos from Bechor. Eventually he learns it from Bechor by a Hekesh. So now Abaya had brought this in to prove the point that Kodesh and Kalim as well, if the Mizbeach is damaged, you can't eat them. Well, that's how he's doing it, because we're saying that if the Mizbeach is destroyed, then you can't eat a Bechor, which is an example of Kodesh and Kalim. Then the same thing. Not only if the Mizbeach is completely destroyed, but even if it's damaged, then you have, and you can't eat, Kodesh and Kalim anymore. As far as Maisa Sheni, by the way, there is some discussion. We're saying in our Gemara that Maisa Sheni can't be eaten when there's no Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. It can't be eaten in Yerushalayim when there's no Beis Hamikdash. What about if the Mizbeach is just damaged? Are we saying also that Maisa Sheni can't be eaten or not? There's a fair amount of discussion about that. There is also, in this connection, so again, Rabbi Shmuel is saying, the Gemara is saying that Rabbi Shmuel holds that Kedusha Rishonah Loi Kidsha L'Asid Lavad. And Rashi is explaining that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, of the Beis Hamikdash, and the Kedusha of the rest of Eretz Yisrael are intertwined together, and therefore when one goes away, the other goes away. Tosfos has an enormous discussion over here. This Tosfos continues on most of the next Omud as well. If not the longest Tosfos in Shas, it's definitely one of the longest, that goes into this whole matter. Is it in fact the case that Lord Kitchel lost in love? The fact is, for example, we're not allowed to have bamos, we're not allowed to private mizbechas and bring korbanos anywhere. So we see that the mikdash still has kedusha. Rabbi Shmuel is not going to argue with that. And a whole bunch of other questions that if Loi Kidsha lost his lover, then again, what's the whole question about bringing Maisa Sheni? So Tosfos gets into a long, long discussion about it, with different Gersois as well. And one thing is, Tosfos brings up the point, there may be a difference after all, when we talk about Kidsha L'Shaita and Kidsha lost his lover, there may be a difference in that regard between the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael versus the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash. We could say that even the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael maybe has gone away, but the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, but the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash is not. Is what Tosfos discusses. Now and then in turn the question is, why should that be? So there's an explanation. So Tosfos elsewhere explains a couple of reasons. One thing is because We see, for example, by Bote Orechoima, we see by walled cities in Eretz Yisrael, the halacha is even when the walls are destroyed, they still have the din of Bote Orechoima, because it goes according to how it was originally. So therefore, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim would be the same thing. The Kedusha of it was within the walls of it, and even in a time when there's no walls, then it would still have
the same thing. And Megillah?
What Megillah? Megillah also. Another point Tosfos mentions is that the Pasuk calls Yerushalayim Nachla. At the end of the Perek, at the end of the Masechta, we're going to talk about the Pasuk, Alamanucha, Vela Nachla, where Nachla refers to Yerushalayim, and Nachla is something permanent. Nachla in Lahes. You also have the Pasuk until Zos Menuchosi Ade Ad, where it's clear that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is forever. The Rambam also explains that there's a difference, that the Rambam phrases it as follows. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim depends on the Shekhinah being there, and the Shekhinah has never left, so therefore the Kedusha is still there. So therefore the Mokam HaMikdash still has Kedusha. This would be an example of that. So the Kedusha of Yerushalayim...
But there's the Mikdash?
Yeah, it's not only about that, it comes up in other places as well, but yeah. So the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash still exists, which is Negeah, Lahalacha. I mean, not only as far as that potentially you could bring Korbanos, and we find famously, for example, that Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael because he wanted to bring, this in the year Hei Alof Yud Zayin, 1257, on the secular calendar, he moved to Eretz Yisrael and he had plans to go up onto the Hanabayas and bring a Korban Pesach over there. The other Chachamim of his time, the Balei HaTosfos, argued with him on various grounds why it's not possible. And in the end, he didn't do it. But in closer to our times, after the Six-Day War, for a few years, the devil would tell people to stay out of the old city on Erev Pesach, because otherwise they might have to go up onto the Harabayas and bring a Korban Pesach. So the Rambam makes that point. The Ravid actually disagrees over there and says that maybe the Kedusha of the Harabayas nowadays is only Dirabbanan. So one thing that's Negeah is Tmeim going up onto the Harabayas. According to the Rambam, it's fully also Daraisa, at least in the parts where Tmeim, technically the Harabayas, they're allowed to, if they're Tmeim Mess. Just not if they're Zovim or Balikari or whatever. Only in the Azara can they not go if they're Tmei Mess, but we don't know nowadays exactly where the Azara begins and ends, whereas according to the Raivad, the whole issue may only be Dirabbanan. As far as Kiddush HaSa'or, it's also, you have a Machorkas Rishonim, based on this Gemara and other Gemaras, whether in fact it still exists nowadays, which therefore is negated to the question of whether Truma and Meiser and Shemitah and so forth are Dirabbanan. One point that came up when they brought up the Heter Mechira, when they came up with the Heter Mechira, where every Shemitah, they do like a Mechira Schomitz type thing and sell the agricultural land of Eretz Yisrael to the Goyim so that the Jewish farmers can work it. And originally they meant it as a one-off thing. Eventually it became a permanent established thing. So one of the points that was brought to bear by Rabbi Yitzchak Kohanan Spector was one of the leading Rabbanim who dealt with it at the time, and other Rabbanim. One point that came up is, you have opinions of Rishonim that the whole Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is only did Rabbanan nowadays, and therefore we can do that kind of harama in order to get around it. Anyway, the Gemara finishes off to dealing with Rabbi Shmuel's drasha. So the question is, Rabbi Shmuel is saying in the end that we're learning Ma'aseh Sheni from a Bechor via Hekesh. He's saying like this, you have a double Hekesh over here. You can't eat the meat of a Bechor because you can't sprinkle the blood because Doma and Bsara are compared together in the pasuk. Then he wants to use from Bechor a Hekesh, from the meat of the Bechor, a Hekesh to Ma'aseh Sheni, but you can't eat Ma'aseh Sheni nowadays either. But he Dovra Alama Behekesh, Chozer Malama Behekesh. When he learns one thing from another with a Hekesh, how can he then learn a third thing from the second one with a Hekesh? We learned it in the previous parak that you can't do that. And the answer is that within Kodshim you can't do that. The answer is Ma'aseh Dagon Chulin, because ultimately we're learning to Ma'aseh Dagon, which is Chulin, so therefore that's not a problem. We're doing one Hekesh within Korbanos, from the blood of the Bechor to the meat of it. Then we're doing another Hekesh from the meat of the Bechor, which is Kodshim, to Ma'aseh of grain and other produce, which is Chulin, so therefore you're fine. So the Gemara says, "Vanicham landam of also woman as linen." In the previous perek, we talked about that there's a machloekus between the papa and Marzutra. Whether we go according to Basel Lomid as linen, do we go according to the opinion that says that we go, that we look at what we're learning to? So in that case, then fine, what we're learning to is Chulin, so then the rule of a double Hekesh is not a problem. El Lamanda on Basel Malamid as linen, but if you say we go according to the one who, that you learn it from, and even then, when you're learning from Kodshim, so then Ma'ikolamim, but what are you going to say? Then you still have a double Hekesh within Kodshim, from the blood to the meat, and from the meat to something else outside of Kodshim. So one end of that Hekesh is within Kodshim. And in fact, in the sugya earlier, Ravina, which is who's pointing this out over here, he himself holds that you go according to Lamed, but still we have to answer the Braisa according to the opinions that say that you go according to the Malamed. And the answer is Dama Basa, Chodamilsi, the blood and the meat are considered the same thing. They have different dinim, of course, but they're considered to this extent. You can't eat the meat until the blood is sprinkled, so therefore it's considered as though they're tied together. So it's not really a Hekesh. It's an automatic thing. When the blood is sprinkled, you can eat the meat. It's not a Hekesh. It's just that the two things are automatically tied together. So therefore, Sabaya says to there, based on this Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, you have a proof that Bechor cannot be eaten when there's no Mizbeach, and or when the Mizbeach is damaged, and the same thing would apply to all Kodshim Kalim. So that answers that question. So now they will continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and the Gemara is going to continue with another opinion that disagrees with that and says that, in fact, that Kodshim Kalim maybe can be eaten when the Mizbeach is not intact.
Why do we